Alaskans, we're still dealing with a pandemic. Longer nights and seasonal affective disorder don't make it any easier. We encourage you to take care of both your mental and physical health this winter. Get outside. Enjoy traditional foods. Connect with your community. And keep your body moving. Let's take care of ourselves and each other.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa Yakyadi London. State legislators around the country are in the process of determining the boundaries for voting districts for the next 10 years. Some tribal officials and voting rights advocates are expressing concerns that those boundaries are diluting the ability to elect people who represent tribal needs and values. Coming up, we'll take a look at some of those concerns and we'll take your calls. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal judge has rejected the state of Alaska's legal challenge to a tribe's out-of-season hunt last year over food security concerns during the pandemic. Jacob Resnick reports.
About a year and a half ago, fresh groceries in the community of Cake were in short supply. It was the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, and meat, dairy, and other perishables weren't showing up on the barge, as nationwide hoarding caused shortages of basics like toilet paper, flour, and other staples. And also, workers key to the nation's food web were getting sick.
Our meat supply kind of got pretty low because of the virus hitting the meatpacking plants in the lower 48.
Joel Jackson is president of the Organized Village of Cake. The normal hunting season doesn't begin till the fall, and it was too early for the salmon run. But there were plenty of deer and moose in the dense forests, so Jackson went looking for permission to organize a community hunt.
I went to the Fish and Game, first of all, and they absolutely said, no, that's not going to happen.
In the end, the Federal Subsistence Board authorized a special hunt for the community of Cake in June. It went as planned.
We got the two bull moose and five male deer. You know, it was all distributed to our tribal members.
But then, Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration filed a lawsuit, claiming there was no food security risk. There's long been tension between state and federal authorities over subsistence rights, and the state's position was that the special hunt was exclusionary and an example of federal overreach. The Native American Rights Fund, which offered legal aid to Cake's tribe, welcomed the ruling, and Tribal President Jackson says it was a victory for tribal sovereignty.
I hate the word subsistence because that's Western world, but, you know, we practice our way of life. If worse comes to worst and somebody tries to limit us to one we're in dire need of something, I'm not going to sit back and wait for their decision. That's not going to happen. Things can go south in a hurry.
A spokesman for the Department of Law released a short statement. He said the state was considering an appeal. For National Native News, I'm Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Alaska.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has allocated more than $1.5 million to combat childhood lead exposure on tribal lands in the Southwest. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches has more.
The federal funds were awarded to the Intertribal Council of Arizona through a federal grant program. It's part of an action plan aimed at expanding testing to identify sources of lead in drinking water at childcare facilities and schools on the Navajo Nation and other tribal lands in Arizona, as well as California, Nevada, and New Mexico. It also includes detailed training for staff and methods to implement voluntary lead reduction programs along with public education. While the EPA is working with partners to test for lead in children, the agency doesn't maintain data for exposure. According to the Arizona Department of Health Services, however, several zip codes on the Navajo and Hopi Nations are considered high risk for childhood lead exposure, though no data was available for large sections of the tribe's lands in northern Arizona. A primary way that children children are exposed is through drinking water, even low levels of lead in children, infants, and fetuses can cause behavior and learning problems, lower IQ, stunted growth, and other negative health effects. In rare cases, higher amounts can cause seizures, coma, and even death. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The All Pueblo Council of Governors, the Navajo Nation, and the Jicarilla Apache Nation announced Monday a consensus on New Mexico's state house map. The tribes have worked for 8 months to agree on House, Senate, and congressional maps. Tribal leaders say it's important for tribal involvement in redistricting and to protect Native voting rights. The coalition is ready to take the maps to the legislature. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the National Indian Child Welfare Association. You can stand with NICWA to protect Native children and keep them connected to their family, community, and culture. Information on NICWA and how you can help at nicwa.org.
Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. Tribal leaders in Arizona are expressing concerns over the upcoming voter redistricting process in their state, saying the recommendations by an independent commission could weaken the tribe's voting power. They say the proposed boundaries make it harder for Native nations to elect someone who knows and represents their interests. Tribes in Oregon have similar concerns. And today we'll look at some redistricting hotspots and some other voting access issues around the country. Once set, the boundaries drawn in the coming months will be permanent for the next 10 years. Some Native nations are seeing some hard-fought gains in voter access, and some are seeing their position weakened. And we'd like to hear from you as well. What is the redistricting process in your state? You can call in to join our discussion. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now our first guest is joining us from Denver, Colorado. She's Jacqueline De Leon. She is a staff attorney for the Native American Rights Fund, and she is Isleta Pueblo. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Jacqueline.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So what is the potential voting power of Native Americans in the coming decade?
So Native Americans have the opportunity to really shape this country's future. We have key voting blocks in key swing states across the country that make up a population large enough that make the difference in national elections. Locally and regionally, Native Americans also have tremendous power. They have power to determine school boards, which we've seen become an increasingly hot topic over the last year. They have the power to determine, how resources are spent. Really, the way that they do that is through political participation and through fair boundary lines.
And why is it so important to protect the influence of Native American voting rights?
Well, like I said, Native Americans have a tremendous amount of power, and they need to be able to actually flex that power. And there are ways that the people that don't want Native Americans to participate, who are very well aware that Native Americans have a tremendous amount of power, that want to keep Native Americans from participating. And so whether that's state actors or county actors or local actors that know that Native Americans can't influence elections, there are forces that are trying to keep Native Americans from actually participating in the political systems that give access to resources. And so what's important is that Native Americans are not deterred, that we actually realize the impact that we can have locally, regionally, and nationally, and that we have every opportunity to fairly vote.
What are some of the ways that you're making sure that Native Americans are not deterred?
Well, you know, I think for voting generally, we are working very hard to provide federal protections for Native Americans. What we're seeing is that there are consistent ways that states and local actors are keeping Native Americans from voting. So, for example, not allowing on-reservation polling places, unreasonably far distances to polls, the lack of mail delivery and addressing in Indian country, all of those are systemic barriers that keep Native Americans from being able to vote. And so we think that there needs to be federal protection. We've entered Senator Lujan from New Mexico, Representative Sharif Davids, and Representative Cole have all introduced the Native American Voting Rights Act. And that act would provide specialized protections for these type of systemic barriers, against these systemic barriers that are keeping Native Americans from voting. We're also working very hard to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. And what that does is it protects the Voting Rights Act that has been severely weakened by some Supreme Court decisions in the recent years. And so, we need a full and robust Voting Rights Act to fight back against this discrimination that's occurring across the country. So those are two kind of federal laws that we're really concentrating on and a call for Native communities to rally behind to try and ensure that Native Americans have fair voting access.
What are some of the ways that Native American communities can rally behind the Native American Voting Rights Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act?
They can contact their representatives. There are powerful constituents within key states that need to hear that Native Americans are very invested in voting rights. So, for example, we know that Arizona has been discriminating against Native Americans for a very long time, but specifically in the last 5 years, they've been passing discriminatory laws and making it more difficult for Native Americans to vote. And that's something that the senators from Arizona should be hearing about, and the importance of passing voting rights protections and federal voting rights protections, not just supporting the bills, but actually passing the legislation is a point that we should all be emphasizing.
Have these discriminatory laws in Arizona increased after the Navajo Nation's key influence on Biden's victory in Arizona?
Yes. We saw that there were voting rights laws that were passed that undermined a settlement with the Navajo Nation in Arizona. Arizona has been consistently making it more difficult for Native Americans to vote. So, they outlawed ballot collection even after the DOJ expressed some concern about the effect of ballot collection in rural Native communities where people don't have access to roads or mail. They've also, I think this last 2020 election, the Pascua Yaqui tribe was denied an on-reservation early polling place, and the county spent $180,000 fighting against that on-reservation access, really entrenched positions to try and keep Native Americans from voting. And so, I think that we've seen consistently in Arizona a hostility towards Native American voting rights, and that's only increased after Native Americans really flexed their power and were key to Joe Biden's presidential victory.
Thank you. So who has the power to draw district boundaries? Can you help our audience understand that better?
Yeah, so it actually kind of varies from state to state. So sometimes it's the state legislators that are drawing boundaries. Sometimes there are independent commissions that draw boundaries, and those can be composed of Republicans and Democrats and independents that are not part of the legislature. They're like either independently elected or appointed. So it really kind of varies from state to state. And so you've got to look at your state. And NARF has some resources about how you can figure out the process in each individual state. And all of those are available at vote.narf.org. There is a redistricting tab, and you can press on that to find out more information.
Okay, so that's how Native people can get more informed about redistricting, right?
Right.
Can you tell us more about NARF's influence on redistricting and some of the actual, things you're spending your time on to help with this issue?
Yeah, so NARF this year, we launched the largest fair redistricting project in the country or in Indian country's history. And what we're doing is trying to provide national resources for folks to understand the process better and be able to advocate for their communities. And we've also concentrated specifically on six states and provided more focused advocacy there. So those states are Alaska, Arizona, Montana, New Mexico, North Dakota, and South Dakota. We've been working with tribes in each of those states and advocacy organizations in each of those states to walk through the process and to sort of be hyper vigilant about, what lines are being drawn and how those are influencing Native American power. But there are, a lot of lines that are being drawn that, that NARF isn't monitoring just because of the sheer size. And so if there are issues that are arising in your local community, we definitely encourage you to reach out. You can reach out directly to me at jadeleon@narf.org, or you can email vote@narf.org.
Okay. And then quickly before the break, we're coming up on that. Why those states? And we can also talk more about this after the break as well. Why those states?
Those states, they have significant Native American populations, and they have historically had issues with redistricting. So previous cases, or we've identified that they're likely to engage in some unfair line drawing. So we've been trying to make sure that we're very vigilant about those states.
And given that Alaska only has one congressman, is it different up there or in terms of the redistricting?
Right. So it's, redistricting isn't just congressional seats. It's also a lot, state House maps often and Senate maps. It's also, county offices. So there's a lot of lines that are drawn, even in states that only have very few congressional representatives. So this process extends beyond just congressional seats.
Well, thank you. I'll ask more about this after the break. So this is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. You can also reach out on Facebook at Native America Calling or on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and we'll get your comments on the air. You can also interact with us on Instagram and Facebook at Native America Calling and tag me, your host, Alyssa K. London. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. Most people think. The Biden administration is forming a working group on indigenous, traditional, and ecological knowledge. That's among the innovations announced at the recent White House Tribal Nations Summit. It's also a sign of increasing awareness about the value of Native knowledge and science. We'll hear more about that on the next Native America Calling.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you there are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States. You may choose which COVID-19 vaccine you receive as a booster shot. Getting the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. State officials are busy setting the boundaries that will affect how voters are represented for the next 10 years. tribal leaders and voting rights advocates are expressing concerns about some of those efforts. You can join our discussion as well. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. And before the break, we were speaking with Jacqueline De Leon. She's a staff attorney for the Native American Rights Fund, and she is Isleto Pueblo. And she was sharing with us about some of the states that they are particularly focused on that are the most likely to have redistricting issues that will affect the Native American community. But we also want to bring into the conversation an individual from Albuquerque, New Mexico. He is Key Allen Begay Jr. He is a Navajo Nation Council delegate representing five chapters of the Navajo Nation. Welcome to Native America Calling, Delegate Begay.
Good morning. This is Delegate Key Allen Begay Jr. calling in from the city of Albuquerque, New Mexico. My name is Key Allen Begay Jr., Council Delegate of the 24th Navajo Nation Council. I'd like to just introduce myself. Representing five chapters of the community from the central part of the Navajo Nation, Low Mountain Chapter, Tachip Blue Gap Chapter, Tsalana Cottonwood Chapter, Nalsleni, and Mini Farms Chapter. Those are the five chapters that I represent to the 24th Navajo Nation Council. And good morning, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction. Can you share with us how redistricting is impacting the chapters that you represent?
Well, a lot of areas, the most important issues and discussion that we're continuing to address is the accessing of the voting location, the having the voting rights issues that we address. To the commissioners, I believe last Wednesday, the president of the Navajo Nation Council, the president of the Navajo Nation, the speaker of the Navajo Nation Council, and myself made a public comment to the redistrict public comments. We've stressed about the boundary where they're trying to span some of the district line further west of the state of Arizona. I believe currently it's in the territory of Representative Gozar's area. But what we continue to stress is that we need to be have access and have the power of the Navajo Nation be able to be combined with other neighboring tribes, which is the Hopi Indian tribes, the San Carlos, and the White Mountain Apache in several areas within the Grand Canyon, the Havasupai and Hualapai tribes. So these are some of the things that we, just the previous caller indicated that I believe that they're, I'm not sure, I'm not saying that they are, but just trying to disseminate some of the voting power or the voting situation that we have right now is kind of being targeted by the commissioners. But even though the state of Arizona, by constitution, they require two Republicans, two Democrats, and one independent to be the independent commissioners for the redistricting. But with having two voting by two Republicans and two Democrats, with one independent being the chair, it's just a matter of which way the independent will be favoring the final vote on this district process.
Delegate Key Allen Begay Jr., how are you working with the other tribes that you just mentioned to make sure that collectively you can influence the outcome of those votes potentially with redistricting?
As a delegate, of course, the majority of the discussion we have, the Navajo Nation Council has provides having the Navajo Nation Human Rights Commission to take the lead in working with other tribes and in working with other tribal executive branch or the tribal council members in making sure that we continue to stick together. Making sure that our voice is heard and making sure that we collaborate, continue to cooperate in communication in indicating that This is the only way that we follow through in making the position known to the commissioners and the state and, of course, the government about how we feel that this particular redistricting issue is a big concern for us. And a lot of things I would think that with the COVID situation across the United States, of course, around the world, we feel, and I feel personally, that the 2020 census really didn't have much data collected from some of these rural part of the, particularly in the Navajo Nation, and that's the reason why the outcome of the low number made it seems that there's less Navajo living on the reservation. I'm sure that's the same way with other tribes having limited access of these census counter, having to go door to door. And a lot of them, because like for the Navajo Nation, you, at each of these access of, to their homes, they have a sign saying absolutely no visitors or no visitors signs on each of the entrance of these individuals. So those are some big factors that I know that really made it difficult for having a outcome of a larger number where we would be able to demonstrate that there's more Navajo living on the reservation than off the reservation, because right now the Navajo Nation has a census count around 400,000 plus. I believe that we're still having Navajos continue to registering, getting their census. So that's how we continue to work with other tribe as more of our communication and working together. And I believe the president of Navajo Nation and the speaker of the council continues to speak with each of the tribal leadership, top leadership, whenever when it comes to collaborating and making the decision in how we provide output of these press release, that how and what we say that there has been a discussion.
Thank you, Delegate Begay. Jacqueline, can you comment on what Kialan just shared about the census data and how it's often exclusionary of the actual population of a tribal nation? Jacqueline, are you there?
Yes, sorry. Historically, Native Americans have been undercounted by the census, unfortunately. And that's, you know, due to a lot of factors, poor road conditions, you know, extremely rural nature, and, you know, lack of response rates and lack of, you know, the ability to mail a census form to homes. And then, you know, obviously the pandemic hit, and that made census even less effective in some areas, which meant that not only were, you know, Native Americans unable to receive their census form at their home because they don't get residential mail delivery, door-to-door knockers also couldn't be deployed. And so we saw some bad census data come in. And the reason that the census data is important is because those are the numbers that are used when determining districts in redistricting. So, you know, you have to have, you know, a roughly equal number of people in each district. And if your population is undercounted, then it becomes harder to advocate that your community deserves, you know, a certain number or type of representation. So, you know, unfortunately, the census was a difficulty that Native Americans are facing. And it is important in future years to advocate for a more fulsome count of Indian country and to encourage census response.
Thank you. I mean, how is it that they don't go into the rural parts of a tribal reservation in order to do an accurate population count? Why is that? There are other rural parts of America that aren't reservations, and they're able to access those people, I assume, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there is a fundamental unfairness when it comes to counting in Indian country. You know, we have worse roads, we have worse mail delivery, even relative to other rural Americans. And so those structural deficiencies end up making it more difficult for census workers and even more difficult to vote and to access resources. And so obviously, I think that is unfair, and it continues to present problems. And of course, the irony is that when you're undercounted, you get less representation, which means that you're less able to advocate for the changes in your community that you need. So it really is a vicious cycle.
That is ironic. Well, someone who wants to also join in to this live talking circle is a caller from Harlem, Montana, calling in from KBGA. Their name is Bum, and they ran for office, and they have a good story to share with us.
Well, good morning. Appreciate you having me on the air. Just wanted to let you folks know that what happened back up here in Harlem in a district for the Montana legislature. In 1993, I ran against a non-Indian that had been in the legislature for 30-plus years. And he was a Democrat. I ran as a Democrat. And he really didn't do anything wrong in the legislature. And I was just I just thought it was time for a change. We ran a good, clean election, and we even made the Osgood files on national radio. But when the vote came about, the gentleman got 81% of the votes off the reservation, and I got 19%. On the reservation, I got 81% of the votes, and he got 19%. So theoretically, we should have been real close or tied. But when they counted up the votes that evening, he won by over 300 votes. And that opened our eyes to a number of things. The voting age percentage was drastically wrong here in our district. The polarization came to light. And so we filed suit against the state of Montana with the assistance of the Department of Justice. We won, and the state of Montana was ordered to redraw the district lines up here in north central Montana. But then the battle had just started. We attended, along with myself and tribal members, we attended different hearings across the High Line in about six or seven different communities. And lo and behold, you know, we knew Montana being a red state that we were going to face opposition. We did in the Republican Party. But lo and behold, even in some of the cities and towns where we had the hearings, the Democrats were against us. So we felt we were discriminated by both parties. And we felt, of course, it wasn't right. We did get redistricting lines redrawn in our favor with the voting age percentage a little bit in favor of natives here across the High Line. So since then, we've had good representation in Helena from the districts up here. The district included not only Fort Belknap, but the Rocky Boy Indian Reservation and the Fort Peck Indian Reservation as well. And we've had good representation, excellent representation in Helena as a result of the work. And it just wasn't myself and my wife Barb there. There was a number of other people that helped us throughout the whole process. But again, too, you know, it was sad that, of course, you know, we knew the Republicans were going to be against us, but it was really sad that the Democrats were as well. But I just want to let the listeners know that, you know, the fight can be won. Don't give up. You got to have some thick skin in some of these hearings. The big thing right now is voter registration, and not only that, but getting people to the polls and stuff. So it's really, really important that we still take advantage of it. I'm getting up a little in age there. I don't have any notion to run for any elected office, but our younger folks have to take advantage of it, like the people saying in front of me that were saying there's so much involved, you know, representation in Helena means money that can come back to the towns and cities where Indians live in, but also the reservations and stuff. So thank I just you. Want listeners to know it can be done. Don't give up. And there's just a lot to win from that, and our young people have to get involved.
Thank you, Bum, for sharing that story. Jacqueline, this highlights the recourse that voters have if they feel the districts don't represent them. They have to go to courts. Do you have any comments to share about how NARF helps with stories like what Bum just shared?
Yeah, so I think that is a really powerful story, and thank you so much for sharing. And you know, we are continuing to litigate in Montana because of the voter suppression that's occurring. And that voter suppression is occurring because Native Americans have flexed their voice and are agitating for their power. So I'm really proud of the work that you all did in the past to secure fair districts, and you know, are going to continue to push for fair districts in this cycle as well. You know, NARF, when we find a violation of the Voting Rights Act, we are looking, you know, to bring suit, and we are keying up lawsuits where we see violations of the Voting Rights Act. You know, we try to work in states so it doesn't get to that point, you know, so prior in the process, you know, advocate. But when there are violations of the Voting Rights Act, meaning that, you know, Native American populations are either diluted, meaning that, you know, you put more non-Native into a district so that the voting strength is not powerful enough, made so compact that all the Natives are in one district when they should, you know, say have two districts, then we will file suit when we hear about those cases. So if you suspect that that might be the case in your community, again, you can reach out to vote@narf.org, and we have experts on retainer that can evaluate the claims, and then obviously a team of lawyers that are very well trained in these issues as well.
Thank you, Jacqueline. And Delegate Begay, any thoughts on the story that Bum shared with us?
The bigger area that I believe that each of the Native American tribes, I say that for Navajo, there's a lot of times that misinformation is always the key in a lot of these election issues. Proper, effective translation would really be also helpful in making sure that accurate information, the process, and then what is really a redistricting issue? What's the purpose of it? And the challenging for the Navajo Nation, we always encounter also is that the reservation lies into three states, the state of Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona.
Right.
So we have to deal with
Delegate
each of the...
Delegate Begay, I want to talk with you more about this. We do have to go to break right now. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. So you can call in at 1-800-996-2848. We're going to talk with Jacqueline De Leon and Delegate Kialan Begay more after the break, along with a few more guests. I'm your host, Alyssa London, and we'll be right back.
Mesa Lands Community College can help you lead the way in your chosen field. At Mesa Lands, where one in three students is Native American, you get hands-on opportunities working one-on-one with instructors in wind energy, where students go up the turbine in their first semester, silversmithing with access to the largest foundry in the Southwest, and blacksmithing in the cowboy arts. Mesa Lands has a national top 10 rodeo team, too. Info and applications at mesalands.edu. Mesa Lands Community College supports this program.
You're listening to Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. Are you looking forward to upcoming elections in your state? Is your tribe getting the fair representation in legislative and congressional elections? You can join our discussion as well. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were speaking with Jacqueline De Leon, staff attorney for the Native American Rights Fund, and also Delegate Kialan Begay Jr., a Navajo Nation Council delegate representing five chapters of the Navajo Nation. Delegate Begay, I want to let you finish your thought that you were speaking on before we had to go to break.
Before we go in on break, I was talking about the importance of the translations of this particular issue directly to our Navajo people. And I think it's very important that the purpose, what is redistricting, what is independent commission, what is the purpose of this census issue, and how it really affects us as an individual, as a Native American. Those are very important issues, but how to effectively communicate this information directly to our tribal members is very key, and I think that's some of the reason why we lose interest in some areas, because a lot of these information are just disseminated on radios or social media or even broadband. That's a bigger issue that we have on the Navajo Nation, broadband, with lack of cell service and internet access. So everything goes down the line that if there's no infrastructure, modern infrastructure, I mean, they're just limited because you just actually have to go door to door. Having that many Navajo people across the 27,000 square mile is a big challenge. So again, with the Navajo Nation having to be in part of the state of Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah, and with that, 11 counties, I mean, you talk about trying to coordinate with each of the local county government and the state dealing with three commissions, the redistricting commissions of the state really is a big challenge. But just like the other caller indicated that never give up, and we continue to strive to make sure that we stand and be the voice of our Navajo people and other tribal members.
Thank you, Delegate Begay. Now, also joining us on our show today from Warm Springs, Oregon, is Jaylin Supa. She's the creator of the Papa Luxi Misha, and she's from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Welcome back to Native American Calling, Jaylin. Do we have you on the line?
Good morning.
Good morning. So redistricting has already been done and voted on in Oregon, correct?
Yes, it has, and all of our maps have passed with really no pushback from anybody, and so we're done.
So all your maps have passed, so that's a good thing, right? That's what you wanted, your community advocated for?
No, we, specifically to our house maps, three of our communities their power was diluted. And the difference with us, though, is it wasn't necessarily just our Native community getting split up. We got split up from the Latinx community who has similar issues as us. And so we saw that as also a split and a dilution of our power to be able to elect people that represent us.
And so going forward, how is this going to affect your tribe and other tribes in the state and the Latinx community?
So for us, our house map, our congressional map is fine. It didn't change much, but our house maps actually put our reservation boundaries in a whole new district. But we have community members that live in a neighboring town who are off reservation, which there's probably a good, maybe, I think it's a third of our population lives in that town. And so we got split from them, and that's where our dilution of power happened. And now they're in the same district that we used to be in. And so now we can't really elect people that represent us because our votes will go in opposite directions.
That is disheartening to hear. Jacqueline, were you involved in this redistricting process? How did the Native American Rights Fund try to help with this and prevent the outcome that ultimately occurred?
Unfortunately, we weren't involved in this process. I think we should probably do a review. So maybe if you could reach out, we can see sort of what the process and result was, but we weren't involved in Oregon.
Okay, thank you for letting us know that. Jaylin, what further advocacy work is being done now that redistricting has taken place?
So I worked on census and I worked on redistricting. When I worked on census, I didn't realize that it was connected to redistricting. And it kind of really made me upset to understand that I did work on census, not realizing there was a second layer to the work. And so now that I know that, one of the things I want to do over the next 10 years is put up legislation. So we're working on a legislative concept right now that creates a law that requires our state to, I guess, bring our tribes to the table in regards to redistricting. And so that's what I'm going to be working on the next 10 years. But one of the things I noticed in this process is a lot of us don't understand redistricting, and we don't understand the connection between census and redistricting and how that should be a continuous project together. And then our communities don't understand redistricting and how this plays out in our communities of who we vote in, how important voting is, and how important these lines are and where we land on these maps. And so we kind of had to take a step back and do more education and awareness. And NARF was actually on this project, but they came in as an education piece because that's where we were at in our community, because this is all new to us. And so we really had to take a step back where we were in the education phase. And so hopefully this next go around in 10 years, which really isn't that far ahead, hopefully we'll be in a better place to advocate versus trying to learn what the process is going as the process is happening. And so resulting in us not being able to fully advocate for what we need as tribal communities in our state.
So you said that you're going to work on this over the next 10 years. What are some of the projects or action items that you are planning to take?
So right now we are creating a legislative concept, and we're going to present that in the 2023 cycle. But we're continuing to build momentum on just having people understand how their one vote is very important to who we can elect, but also building capacity so that we have people that are running. I ran along with three other women from our community, and we had a really huge increase in voting because they knew who we were. So they got involved, and so I'm going to keep building on that momentum and just hope that in the next 10 years, we can also convene our tribes in the state of Oregon with the affiliated tribes of Northwest Indians to build our power beyond just my one community, but throughout the state. And then we're also working with Washington tribes who are going through the process now to hopefully kind of tell them what we experienced, and hopefully they can not experience what we experienced.
Those are great efforts and things that you're focused on, especially making sure that other tribes don't go through what you experienced in Oregon. I also want to bring in from Shelton, Washington, Bobby Blacketer. She's the executive secretary for the Skokomish Indian Tribes Tribal Council, and she's enrolled Skokomish. Welcome to Native America Calling, Bobby.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Thanks for being on the show. Can you share with us more about voting locations on your reservation and the positives of that?
So about 2020 in September, before the presidential election, we actually got a ballot drop box. Patty McGuire, he is our audit and also the director for election official assistance. He visited tribal council to ensure that there was a spot for this. And once they got that all figured out and he spoke to housing, it only took probably a few months for him to actually set it up. So that's been there for about a year now. We've also been they've also been reaching out to us to get more polling sites on the reservation, but the tribe has been very concerned about COVID and about outbreaks. So a lot of our events and everything have been put on a hold.
What are some other things that your tribe is doing to help increase access to the polls?
I mean, we've considered talking about, like, the polling sites. We've also considered about voter registration sites and polling locations, just along that thing. But because of COVID, we haven't actually branched out from it. A lot of our events are just drive-through events. We don't really we haven't really been opening up our community at all.
That makes sense. COVID has put a strain on a lot of tribal communities and otherwise. What are some other concerns, though, that you have with redistricting so far?
Well, they had a committee that came to visit us recently, and there have been no concerns from tribal council on the Skokomish Reservation redistricting because we're still in county. There hasn't been an issue because we're basically right in the middle of our county. There probably won't be any changes along those lines for a while, so it's not really a concern for our tribal council.
Well, that's a positive. That's not a concern for your tribal council. That's a change from the other individuals we have on the call today.
Yeah, I heard.
Well, thank you. Jacqueline, have you worked much with the Confederated Tribes of Northwest Indians? Is that what it's called, Jalen?
ATNI, Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians.
Excuse me, Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians. Jacqueline, has NARF worked a lot with ATNI?
Yeah,
Yeah, we have in the past. And I just want to emphasize what the last caller was talking about. So, you know, the state is interested in increasing on-reservation access to tribes in Washington, and that's because Washington really recently passed a statewide Native American Voting Rights Act. And so when you have legislation that's actually aimed at, you know, getting rid of the barriers that Native Americans face, then you see this, you know, uptick in state involvement in actually providing more equitable services. And that's why we're pushing for that federal mandate of on-reservation voting access and, you know, different ways of addressing on the lack of mail delivery. And so, you know, I think it's actually a success. ARP was part of pushing for that Washington's Native American Voting Rights Act, and now, you know, looking to move that model to the federal level. And I think that's, you know, a helpful note to end on, just that the fact that, you know, when you push for change, when you push for legislation, it can have a trickle-down positive effect.
So is the legislation in Washington setting a precedent for other states to follow and also for the federal legislation on Native voting rights?
Absolutely. So what they do is, because Washington has an all vote by mail system, you know, they mandated on reservation ballot drop boxes. Like we heard, there was an increase in ballot drop boxes. And then they also allow a tribe to designate a building that can be used to pick up drop off and used as an address to register to vote. So that helps for Native Americans that don't have addresses on their homes and don't receive mail at their homes. So that is a successful model, and it's a model that's incorporated into the federal Native American Voting Rights Act.
Well, that is very positive, and I'm glad that then AT&I can help other Native American organizations around the country hopefully emulate what's happening in Washington State. Can you share with us what the status of federal legislation is on Native American rights and the chance of it going through?
So right now, the Native American Voting Rights Act was attached to the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which was actually a huge victory for Indian country. The John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act was recently, including the Native American Voting Rights Act, was recently endorsed by Senator Murkowski, who is a Republican, which also was, I think, very helpful for the legislation. So right now we have, you know, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act and the Native American Voting Rights Act introduced in the Senate and the House awaiting a vote. And they both have over 50 votes, but what's preventing them from moving forward is the filibuster and the fact that, you know, you need 60 votes to pass legislation. And so, you know, we're really calling for Senate reform to get the Senate working again, to have, you know, something that, you know, 50 votes should be sufficient to pass legislation, including voting rights. And so, you know, there's a push right now for Senate reform to make the Senate work again so that voting rights can pass.
Thank you. And Jalen, what's the possibility of a voting rights measure in Oregon?
This is actually the first time I'm hearing this, and so I think I'm going to reach out to NARF and follow up, because I think it's a great I think it would add to our work that we're currently working on to help tribal communities in Oregon.
Well, great. Look, we're making connections. And Delegate Begay, any thoughts on the voting rights measure in Arizona?
Just like the last caller indicated, that I need to get some more information directly from our state legislatures and the process of all these voting rights that had been passed. I know there was several of them that I sent to our Navajo Nation Council, Navajo Nation, the Department of Justice, of review of a lot of these election process that were passed by the state legislatures and how they're going to affect the Navajo people. So once I get those information, like I said, we'll probably provide some more information directly from the state legislatures and forward the information to you guys. The other thing, the other area that the Navajo Nation continues to work on about the access and the distribution of these ballots on the Navajo Nation is the post office. So that's another bigger mail delivery system that we're really making aggressive position to the United States Postal Service that I think a bigger cooperation by all tribes out there who are having problems with mail delivery, we should be able to join together and make a strong position that better access delivery service on Indian tribes of the mail delivery service should be afforded and be established. So that's my request to each and everyone out there who are listening, that mail delivery service, we need to make a stand to the United States Postal Service that they need to improve their service on Indian tribal land.
Thank you, Delegate Begay. And on that note, that's all the time we have for our show today. There are a number of resources to learn more about voting wherever you are. And one place to start is the website for the Secretary of State's office in your state, and also the Native American Rights Fund's website. I want to thank our guests, Jacqueline De Leon, Kialan Begay Jr., Jalen Supa, and Bobby Blacketer. This has been Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London.
With Christmas supplies and gifts in short supply, rest assured Prairie Edge and the Sioux Trading Post have you covered. Botanicals, craft supplies, beads, books, and music. We may not have it all, but we sure have a bunch at PrairieEdge.com who support this show. Wopila.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Ayela nytän teke kyytä löti. Ekinela ostan ne vuoti. Hata tohuella ki aleti kehysi tanella kohi ikään. Utella no hetti en jäuja ajella nytän teke anneksestiski naski jiget stela at healthcare.gov 1-800-318-2596. He are getting also Medicare or Medicaid una dalka I.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.